Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 23 years ago, Anita Hill, a University of Oklahoma Law School professor, became a household name when she told the world that Clarence Thomas, then a Supreme Court justice nominee, sexually harassed her when he was her boss at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She testified in front of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, which was comprised of 14 white men. Despite her very descriptive and often embarrassing testimony, Clarence Thomas was confirmed to the bench, but Anita Hill's decision to come forward had far more reaching impacts than in the halls of Congress. In the new documentary, Anita, Anita Hill talks about her decision to step out in front of the cameras to tell her story and how that experience changed her life and emboldened women to come forward with their own experiences of sexual harassment. In the film, she says, quote, "I made a deal with myself that I'd go out and talk about sexual harassment for 2 years. At the end of 2 years, it'll be over and I can go back to my commercial law and contracts. We didn't fix it," end quote. So on today's Your Call, we're talking about how far we have come in our understanding of what sexual harassment is and what it takes to stop it. Today, we're joined by Frida Mock, an Academy Award and Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, director, and writer. Her new documentary is Anita. It's playing in theaters now, and Frida joins us from Los Angeles. Hi, Frida. Welcome to the show. And we're joined by Noreen Farrell, Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates, a national civil rights organization dedicated to protecting and expanding economic and educational access and opportunities for women and girls. ERA's 40th anniversary luncheon is on June 17th in San Francisco, and Anita Hill is the keynote. You can find more information about that at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Noreen. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So it was amazing to watch this film and look at or be reminded of what Anita Hill went through back then. And we'll talk about that later in the show, but just give us a sense of what it was like 23 years ago to come forward. I mean, she's going after or talking about a very high profile man. What was the just the feeling around sexual harassment like back in 1991?
Well, this is Noreen, and I, you know, it's hard to believe that sexual harassment was actually prohibited by law 50 years ago when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed. And so the fact that 23 years ago it was still such a, you know, such a watershed moment in terms of stepping forward, I think shows a lot about how that law isn't enforced adequately across all sorts of professions and industries. But, you know, I was a college senior, and I just remember sitting there riveted. It was really taking the issue of sexual harassment to the core of power in this country before that long lineup of men in that committee. And I think that it was, I think at that moment we couldn't have understood how incredibly important it was for women across the country to see someone of Professor Hill's standing, challenging a man in that sort of level of power. I think it had incredible impacts on our movement.
And it's kind of amazing to think about just how descriptive she was. And again, Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, both black, and the Senate Judiciary Committee was comprised of 14 white men, asking her just very descriptive questions. And that's the part that I forgot. I mean, it was amazing to see her so composed up there, but a lot of the testimony was just really embarrassing.
And I think that part of the strategy that we see again and again, and especially when we represent low-wage women workers and sexual harassment claims, is this blaming the victim, victimizing them again, forcing them to talk through things that were incredibly hard for them to experience. And I think it is a part of the reason why people don't step forward, right? Because not only what happened to them, but often their entire history will be on trial as they try to explain what happened to them.
And that is Noreen Farrell, Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates. And Frida Mock is an Academy Award and Emmy Award-winning filmmaker. Her new documentary film is Anita, which is in theaters now. Hi, Frida. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Nice to have you. So what really struck you as you went back in time and watched all of the footage of Anita Hill testifying in front of this Senate Judiciary Committee, which was comprised of 14 white men? What struck you about how the country saw sexual harassment at that time?
Well, I think people didn't quite understand sexual harassment. Even the word sexual harassment was not easily articulated. I mean, people did not use that word. They knew, especially women in the workplace, knew the experience of this action. And in fact, as you know, Anita does not use the word sexual harassment in her statement. She says she's going to talk about the behavior she experienced by her boss, Clarence Thomas. And as you know, the journalists point out in 91 that the idea was not even well understood. What is sexual harassment? Is it a legal activity or is it a sociological description? All I know is that it was clear back then, looking at the hearing footage, that they were kind of stumbling around the word sexual harassment until finally, as you remember, Senator Simpson, seemingly frustrated, or at least on the attack, Anita says, you know, that this, he calls it, a phrase that was shocking to me at the moment, he called it crap, he said sexual harassment crap. Mm-hmm. Well, that word and the way he spoke that indicated the state of mind of him and maybe his colleagues, that would she really actually, you know, have a fair hearing of the facts if their minds were kind of stuck in that interpretation of what sexual harassment was? That, you know, it was a dismissive word. I think we've gone a long ways because 20 years later, you know, there was a recent 21 years later, so there were recent hearings of sexual harassment in the military, and you saw these generals of all their, you know, speaking proudly of trying to address the issue of sexual harassment in the military. Whether they are able to do that, you know, the way the reformists wish change could happen in the military in terms of sexual assault is another question.
Right. And yeah, that's a good point. And we should talk about that later in the show, because that, when you think about sexual harassment, that's where it seems to be getting the most publicity right now, is what's happening in the military. And Noreen, how far have we advanced in our understanding of what sexual harassment is? And talk a little bit about how that happened over the last couple decades.
Well, I think that, I certainly think that there was a watershed moment with the hearings with Professor Hill. But I think also in terms of, I think the law is very clear about prohibiting sexual harassment. What that means always is the gray area that we see the problems. And in fact, despite the fact that the law prohibits it, it is the single most prevalent type of complaint that ERA receives on our hotline, which is a nationwide hotline that fields gender discrimination complaints. And we've seen a sharp rise in these types of complaints, and particularly among low-wage workers. And so there's something amiss. There's something wrong. I think, first, it's very clear that there isn't adequate enforcement, either by employers in their own work settings or in terms of lawyers taking on these cases for low-wage workers. I think that we see problems in terms of not having sexual harassment policies in Spanish. We had a case on behalf of a woman who's a janitor in San Francisco who was sexually harassed and assaulted by her her supervisor alone at night at the ferry building. And the only policies that were in place were English. She didn't even know where to go to complain. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there is this very serious problem about retaliation, which I think that Professor Hill experienced, our client experienced when she was fired, when she complained. We've seen that play out in other industries. Adria Richards, tech industry person who complained about sexual harassment, inappropriate behavior at a tech conference, actually culminated in her being fired by her company. So I think that we've come a long way in terms of making clear that it's prohibited, but how it's enforced, how it's implemented in the workplace, and how we're dealing with retaliation remains a big problem.
And the Equal Rights Advocate hotline number is 800-839-4372, 800-839-4372, and that's Noreen Farrell. She's Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates. Frida Mock is an Academy Award and Emmy Award-winning filmmaker. Her new documentary film is Anita, about Anita Hill. It's in theaters now. And Frida will be with us for the next 15 minutes or so. So if you have any questions for her about her film and what it was like to revisit all of this footage and to look at just how the country dealt with and what their opinion was like about sexual harassment back in 91. We'd love to hear from you. And what strikes you about that that time in history, that testimony, and just how the public responded, how the politicians responded. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if you have your own story to share, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Frank in San Francisco. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'd like to ask Ms. Mock, when you were making your film, did you give Vice President Biden the opportunity to refute the charge that during the Clarence Thomas hearings, there were four female colleagues of Anita Hill ready to back up her accusations and that he never called on them to testify?
I didn't have the opportunity to actually film him. The film started just when the campaign for 212 was starting, and I felt it was going to be impossible to get a hold of him. And number two is an issue I think he has not wanted to be to revisit. It's in the book, you know, The Strange Justice that the two journalists are referenced in the film. It's a fantastic book, and they devote a chapter to the other women. And simply, the bottom line was Biden decided not to call them. They were subpoenaed. They were ready for the. They were sitting there for the whole weekend. And anecdotal comments by staffers have said that Biden felt that's very anecdotal. It was not from his, you know, his interview. That the issue of sexual harassment he felt was not the issue in which he wanted. He wanted to see Thomas denied that position. In other words, the issue of sexual harassment may not have been an important issue for him and the other senators.
Hmm. And Joe Biden had the power to call those other witnesses,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. He's a chair. He determined the proceedings of that whole weekend.
You know, it was amazing to watch that part of the film, these men question Anita Hill and really vilify her in many ways. What really struck you when you rewatched that footage?
Well, I was struck with her absolute, you know, center, her ability to absolutely take each question and to directly answer that question. She was there to tell at the moment what she knew and, you know, to tell the truth. And she was unequivocal in how she was going to handle herself at that time. She thought actually it was going to be maybe 2 hours, but it ended up almost being 10 hours of continuous testimony on that one Friday. And that struck me as something I had not remembered her being there only for one day and one long session, and that she was able to, you know, maintain her dignity, her composure, and her clarity of mind and clarity of expression.
And how old was she at that time?
She was 35.
Wow, that's really young.
Just, you know.
And I just want to agree with that. It and the way that she was able to, notwithstanding all of the you know, salacious words and talk that happened, that she was able to articulate that sexual harassment is about power. Mm-hmm. And I think that's extremely important. And we often see this issue of supervisors and exerting their power through sexual harassment. Unfortunately, I think the modern day, in terms of the evolution of the law, there's been a devolution of law. The Supreme Court recently issued a decision that will make it harder for sexual harassment plaintiffs to hold employers liable for sexual harassment by lower-level supervisors who direct work, who hold themselves out to be supervisors, which is often the case in low-wage workers. And there's an incredible power dynamic. There, fortunately, is a law that's been introduced in the works to counter that decision called the Fair Employment Protection Act. But I think Professor Hill's ability to articulate that this is about power was extremely striking to me.
Exactly. Well, what can we get companies to do to really protect the workers? I mean, in one sense, isn't sexual harassment training mandated, at least in California, for companies at 50 and over employees? Do you need, you know, stronger consequences? I'm just curious how that, what you described, this, you know, evening worker, who was subjected to this boss, the dances.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that certainly, fortunately, in California, the law is better in terms of supervisor status, which is why we were able to hold the employer liable for our client, our janitor client's sexual harassment and assault. But I think that, and we really want to see that across the board in other states.
Yeah.
In other states, there is not requirement for sexual harassment training, which is just astounding in this day and age when it seems it's so clear that people are not understanding what sexual harassment looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the training component is very important, and not just of management, but of lower-level management of employees, because, of course, coworker sexual harassment is unlawful as well if an employer knows about that. Making sure that training is in various language of the workforce,
mm-hmm.
and also really making clear that women and men who step forward to complain about sexual harassment will not be retaliated against.
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one obstacle to people coming forward.
Yes.
And it isn't any wonder after you watch the
yes.
Anita Hill documentary.
But at the same time, as she pointed out, people say, oh, well, no women will come forward after seeing what she was subjected to in that national spotlight. But in fact, the number of claims against through the EEOC went up, and it's been on the stated about 11,000 a year now, compared to before 91, it was a few thousand.
Absolutely.
So in that respect, the courage of those who've been, sort of victimized, has been overridden by determination. And that, yeah.
Well, and what about the class issues involved with this, Noreen? Because Anita Hill had, even though she wasn't testifying in front of any women, she had a lot of support from women politicians. And she was taking on someone very powerful. But what about low-wage workers who don't know their rights and don't have the resources and the funds to step forward?
Well, I think a fundamental difference between the low-wage worker and someone who's a lawyer like myself or Professor Hill is that we can't enjoy the job mobility. They can't just leave a job if it's if it's uncomfortable or violent or unsafe. And I think that these have really devastating economic consequences on low-wage women workers as a result. I think there's a lot of talk about the women's economic agenda in this country, and there isn't enough discussion about the impact of sexual harassment in the workplace on the economic security of low-wage women workers.
Mm-hmm.
There was a study that Flutter employees about a decade ago, which found that sexual harassment resulted in $4.4 million in lost wages,
mm-hmm.
over 973,000 hours of leave annually. And so I think that the impact of either having to leave your job or suffer in silence is just so pervasive and challenging for the low-wage women worker. And there's also this problem of access to justice, right? There's very few organizations like ERA that has a hotline that people can call and find out if what's happening to them is unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
And very few lawyers have the capacity to take on claims of low-wage workers, which may not yield that much money in the end. So I think there is a big lack of access to justice, which compounds the problem for low-wage workers.
Mm-hmm.
That is Noreen Farrell, Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates. Frida Mock is an Academy Award and Emmy Award-winning filmmaker. Her new documentary is Anita. It's in theaters now. And Frida will be with us for about 5 more minutes. So if you have any questions for her this film, you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Deborah in San Francisco. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for your show. I just wanted to emphasize the importance of documenting and how it really lends well should anything go to trial or should the workplace take it seriously. And in San Francisco, if anybody is assaulted, if anyone is raped, they're to go to the police, and under Title 17, that police officer has to take them to General Hospital for a rape kit.
Mm-hmm.
Not all police are aware of this, but in retrospect, that visit in itself, can be confirmed by doctors at General, can be in a kit, and these things, like being able to, while on site, tell another colleague, tell a supervisor, tell a doctor, mm-hmm. these things can be all documented and very useful. So you go to a police officer, or call actually would be preferable, and they are to come to you, take your report, and bring you to General for a rape kit. The Rape and Trauma Center is the place then to go. It's all processed there through General on behalf of the San Francisco law. The city of San Francisco is backed up, as we know, with rape kits, but documentation is key.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Deborah.
Thank you.
Noreen, what advice would you give to women who experience sexual harassment at work?
Well, Deborah, that was an excellent point. I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that first, it's really important that you do write down, even if it's just dates and what happened, things as they occur. I believe that is very important because you'll have to describe that. Even if you decide not to pursue a legal action, you'll have to describe that to the people that you're seeking support from, especially legal assistance. It's very important that you talk to somebody at your workplace contemporaneous with when the harassment is happening. So not just writing it down, but telling somebody in your life, telling a coworker, telling a supervisor, even if you're not quite ready to go up the chain of command quite yet, very important because it's evidence that it happened to you. And then I can't stress enough the importance of seeking out some legal assistance. We often hear from people who think that what is happening to them is okay. We have a project with the Restaurant Opportunities Center United working in restaurants across cities all over the country, and there's a lot of young women, and this is their first job, and they don't even know that this isn't just the price of a paycheck, sexual harassment. And so really getting educated about what you should and should not have to tolerate in the workplace is critical, I think, to protecting your rights.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Deborah. And again, that hotline number at ERA is 800-839-4372. And let's go next to Catherine in Santa Cruz. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you, Rose. I listened to the Anita Hill testimony 23 years ago on Pacifica Radio, and you can get all of it from the Pacifica Radio archives. I was very disappointed in Joe Biden, who I really like. He's everybody's grandpa. He's such a wonderful guy. But he let that go through. He, you know, and we have Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court now. But here's what I really want to say, that our own government, the Department of Health and Human Services, has put out a PSA, a public service announcement, on radio stations that perpetuates sexual harassment against little girls and destructive to little boys. This is the first part of it. It's 6:42 p.m., time for Steve Pato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. And then it goes on.
Well, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but Frida has to go in about 30 seconds. I hadn't heard of this. Have you heard of this, Frida, just quickly?
No, I don't at all.
Okay.
So that's something that one could easily, as a, you know, you're a taxpayer, you should really, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. 30 seconds before we let you go, Frida. Where we are today, are you hopeful that we're actually dealing with this?
Well, I'm hopeful, but there's so much more work to be done. That's the reason Anita wanted to do this film. She felt the next generation, you know, kids who grew up after the hearings, you know, are the ones who are going to continue to face harassment issues in the workplace, on college campuses, which is not as you know, what is it, scandalous. One out of five young women will be raped.
Right.
And this has been going on for decades. But the good news is that finally you have some activists, women, who are filing under Title IX to ask the administration to you know, create a safe campus for them. So I think the hopeful sign is that there are more, particularly young people, have a language. They know what sexual harassment is. They know how to use social media, and they are doing things on the ground, so to speak. And you see it in the film in terms of the, you know, Hollaback movement to stop street harassment. It's a worldwide organization started by Emily May just on the streets in New York. And because of cell phones, they can no longer say it's a he said, she said. They just take pictures of the guy flashing, you know,
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Frida. That's Frida Mock. Her new documentary film is Anita. It's in theaters now. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Many ways to take part in our conversation today on Your Call on the phone, 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK, or you can send your email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the World Service of the BBC, it's World Have Your Say, and following that at noon, it's Backstory here on KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about transporting oil by rail in California. There are plans to move millions of gallons of crude oil through California cities. How safe is it? The Berkeley City Council recently voted to oppose it, and a number of other city councils are now holding public meetings about this. What mechanisms are in place in the event of a spill? That is our conversation tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how far we have come with sexual harassment since Anita Hill testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee 23 years ago. She became a household name when she told the country that Clarence Thomas, then a Supreme Court Justice nominee, sexually harassed her when he was her boss at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. How far have we come in our understanding of what sexual harassment is? How has the law changed? What about women coming forward? We'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866, women and men, I should say, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. The film Anita is now in theaters, and we're joined by Noreen Farrell, Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates, a national civil rights organization dedicated to protecting and expanding economic and educational access for women and girls. ERA's 40th anniversary luncheon is on June 17th in San Francisco. Anita Hill is the keynote. And they have a hotline number. It's 800-839-4372, 800-839-4372. And now I would like to welcome Liz Watson to the show. Liz is Director of Workplace Justice for Women and Senior Counsel to the Education and Employment and Cross-Cutting Teams at the National Women's Law Center. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So what are your thoughts on how far we have advanced in our understanding of sexual harassment 23 years after Anita Hill testified?
Well, I think Anita Hill made a real difference for women. And I think, after Anita Hill came forward, women and men began to be much more aware of what sexual harassment is and began to take it much more seriously. I think thanks to Anita's story, this became a topic that was discussed around dinner tables. It was discussed, as it became part of the public conversation. So I think we have come a long way toward understanding what sexual harassment is and understanding that women deserve fairness and dignity in the workplace. In the hearings, there was a particular senator who, as she was testifying, talked about, oh, that's sexual harassment crap. I don't think we would hear that today. And of course, there have been an intervening series of really important Supreme Court decisions that have helped to define what sexual harassment is. That said, it's still something that many women and men suffer in the workplace today.
What are the most common cases of sexual harassment in the workplace today, Liz?
Well, there are cases of harassment by a supervisor who's abusing, the power that the supervisor has over their subordinates to perpetuate harassment. And it, of course, can be incredibly difficult to tell a supervisor to back off or to report the harassment for the, very reasons that Anita Hill talked about, about being very concerned about having Clarence Thomas take his anger out on her or not give her important assignments, or finding an excuse to dismiss her. She talked about those things in the hearing, and those are still, you know, the things that make it hard to come forward today. And there's coworker harassment too, which is incredibly difficult to suffer in the workplace. And, you know, harassment takes a number of different forms. It can be in the form of degrading comments about a woman because of her sex. It can be in the form of degrading comments about a woman's appearance, as Anita Hill suffered. It can be in the form of sexual assault and rape, and there are cases of that kind of harassment. And all of these forms of harassment are still going on today, but hopefully today we do have the vocabulary to talk about them, and it while it is still very hard to come forward, we now have a law around it to protect women when they do come forward.
Noreen, how is sexual harassment defined today?
Point to Liz's great list of the kinds of sexual harassment we see today. I think another type of sexual harassment that we see is, for example, in the restaurant industry, when a server is forced to endure sexual harassment by customers. And I think that's an important point for two reasons. One, of all of the sexual harassment complaints being filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a third of those are restaurant workers. And I think it is very tied to this idea that many restaurant workers have to earn tips. And in some states, they have to earn tips to actually make the minimum wage. And so it's very much tied to what you have to put up with to actually get a paycheck that will support your family. So I just wanted to add that piece onto Liz's list of types of harassment we see. And so what was your initial question?
How is it defined?
It is unwanted sexual advances or attention. It can be verbal or it can be physical. It should be either pervasive, meaning it happens multiple times, or very severe. So, a single incident may give rise to a sexual harassment claim in the courts. It's also important to know that it involves hostile treatment because of somebody's sex. So someone who's really awful and mean to someone because of their sex or gender identity. And so it's not just sexual advances. I think that what we see a lot of confusion about in our hotline and our work is this idea that there's just sexual banter in the workplace, and it's all good fun and it's all jokes. And I think that at least Anita Hill's comments about what were said to her, it appeared to be phrased in terms of this is all just a joke and fun. But as we know, it is really about power and making someone uncomfortable and continuing on when that's unwanted and stated that it's unwanted.
And that's also huge on university campuses, that this is all just good old fun, boys having fun.
It is the breeding ground. It is where employers are made. We also see it. We see it extremely prevalent in high schools. And both ERA and the National Women's Law Center do a lot of work on high school level and college campuses, because these are where these attitudes are really developed and play out in the workplace.
And that is Noreen Farrell, Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates, and the hotline number is 800-839-4372. We're also joined by Liz Watson, Director of Workplace Justice for Women and Senior Counsel to the Education and Employment Team at the National Women's Law Center. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. If you'd like to talk about what you remember when Anita Hill testified, we'd love to hear from you. Have you experienced sexual harassment? How have you dealt with it? And what are your thoughts on how it is dealt with in the year 2014. How far have we come in the last 23 years? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Matunda in Oakland. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, great.
I have my own consultant business called Isms and Issues, and I do a lot of workshops around the country on race, class, and gender issues. And what was really interesting at that time was that as a result of the hearings, I designed a workshop called The Politics of Stereotypes. And as an African-American man, one of the things that has not been talked about today, but I'm sure people know about, is the tension that was created in the black community as a result of this of the hearings. And you had a dichotomy going on. On the one hand, you had the black community feeling, oh, here's another example of our dirty laundry being aired. But then, the flip side of that was having to choose between sexism or racism. And it was so interesting that, you know, that speaking with black people in the community, particularly black males, but black people in the community, it was very interesting to see how they just didn't want to even deal with the issue of sexual harassment because they looked at it clearly as an issue of racism, even though they saw Clarence Thomas as not any kind of friend to anybody in the black community when they looked at their record. And what was really fascinating is that 20 years later, people who had been involved in that workshop 20 years previous came to me and said, you know what, that was a mistake, because these were the same people that said, oh, well, you know, we got to get him on the Supreme Court. I mean, I guess a lot of people also felt that he was the second coming of Thurgood Marshall, because if you remember correctly, Bush Senior, you know, kind of paraded him out right after the death of Thurgood Marshall as his replacement to Thurgood Marshall. So.
Right.
The whole point was just the tension that existed in the black community, having to basically end up seeing that patriarchy won.
Well, and you make a good point, because in the film, Clarence Thomas, I mean, in his initial testimony, the first 3 minutes, he calls it a high-tech lynching. And he's saying this again in front of 14 white men and constantly using race. Noreen, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what struck you when you saw that Clarence Thomas's testimony again, focusing on that specific issue?
Well, I think whoever advised him came up with a very clever strategy. And I think that the flip side of what the caller is saying, which is a tremendously important point, is that, you know, the intersection of race and sex and sexual harassment claims are extremely problematic for women of color. You know, there's a great study of sexual harassment verdicts in California under California state law, which showed that women of color had much lower verdicts on their sexual harassment claim when they also had race claims. And there is a, you know, there's a real bias that we see in claims by African-American women who have race claims who are also trying to advance sexual harassment claims. So I do feel like it is an extremely loaded issue, and the racial politics of the time, I think contributed to the fact that the hearings were so short. Senator Biden was very hands-off. It did not call those additional. Everyone just didn't want to touch it after Clarence Thomas spoke and, I think, raised that race card.
And Liz, do you have anything to add about what women of color have to deal with when it comes to sexual harassment?
Sure. Well, I think Noreen raises a good point that a lot of times the type of harassment that we see is at the intersection of race and gender for women of color. And I think it's important to point out today that something like a third of harassment cases filed of the charge data with the EEOC are racial harassment cases. And the National Women's Law Center is working very closely with the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund right now on a bill to strengthen federal protections for victims of harassment that would apply whether you're harassed on the basis of your sex or on the basis of your race or for a number of other reasons.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Matunda. Let's go next to John in Monterey. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You were speaking on people that were, on sexual harassment, obviously, and what struck me on that was Bob Filner from San Diego. Mm-hmm. When he was, you know, brought out, and he said that he, you know, to explain himself, and he said he came from a different time. You know, and the weird thing about that is that to make it to like nostalgically frame in the context of back then, you know, sexual harassment was just kind of accepted and it wasn't considered sexual harassment so much it was flirting the office. And the weird thing about that is when you juxtapose that the contrast of that is he's not coming from a different time. That's a that's a now thing, because we see that when we have these high school scandals pop up where the football team has raped a girl like they did back in the Midwest, I want to say about a year and a half ago, and the school did not want to press charges or anything because these boys were the stars of that team. And the reasoning for the PTA and the school district was it will ruin their futures. Mm. And this is the thing. Those guys got, if it had not been brought onto the media, they would have skated on by. I come from Monterey County. It happens out there. It's happened here. It never got on the news here, but stuff like that does happen. So when I hear Bob Filner say, I come from a different time, that's a lie. It's been continual. It's always been there, and we let it happen.
And Bob Filner is the former mayor of San Diego. He was sentenced to 3 months of home confinement and 3 years of probation. He placed a woman in a headlock, kissed another woman. He pleaded guilty in October in an agreement with prosecutors. Liz, were you watching this case, and what are your thoughts on that comment about Bob Filner? And just men in general who say that they come from a different time.
Yeah, that's a very good point that the caller's making, that, you know, well, it's been 22 years since Anita Hill's testimony, and it's been, you know, quite a while since the 1950s comedies with, you know, boss chasing the secretary around her desk and people thinking that was funny. We still see, you know, those kinds of attitudes in today's workplace. We see them in the military. We see them in schools. And that's why these, you know, strong protections from harassment are so important, because, you know, it still is pervasive today. And when you see, you know, if you read the facts of some of these harassment cases, I mean, they're just appalling. You know, that's why the efforts like the efforts to take sexual assault cases outside of the chain of command in the military, or the efforts, a bill was just introduced to ensure that schools would be required to have a harassment policy in place, or the effort that we're working on to strengthen protections from harassment that the Supreme Court just rolled back in the workplace from harassment by a supervisor, are all so important, because it is very much an issue that, you know, continues to dog us today, you know, even though it's 2014.
And Anita Hill is still doing so much work today. She thought that she wouldn't be here today, but this case really galvanized her to get more involved. And she talks a lot about gender inequality. So, Noreen, how do you think we should understand sexual harassment in the context of gender inequality?
Well, I think it's also, I think that the last caller reminded me to make this point. I think it's important to remember and emphasize that this can impact, this culture can impact men as well. So when we say gender, we mean men and women. And I'm reminded of the Miami Dolphins lineman Richie Incognito, right, who, you know, I think just exemplifies the culture of football, which I think speaks to what happened in those college cases, of just tormenting each other, you know, with sexual and homophobic comments and bullying, and I think that impacts men and women. I think that it goes to the core of what gender inequality is all about, because it is about power. It is about creating a space in our work and the work of the National Women's Law Center, creating a space where women feel safe enough to be able to make enough to support their families. And if that really just underlying human right to be safe from sexual harassment and violence is not a priority, we will not achieve gender equality. I think it is symbolic in that it shows how people feel about women and women workers predominantly, although of course it does happen to men, and particularly, you know, men and women in the LGBT community. But I think that it is a core issue. It is not it's not a peripheral one, and I think that we just know we have a lot of work to do.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you again for calling, John. Let's go next to Ruthann. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. I wanted to ask the guests two questions. One is if they've had any experience with people complaining about, you know, the image is that this is, you know, corporate high execs, you know, putting the moves on lower secretaries or people at restaurants, putting the harassing low-wage workers. And I was wondering if they'd had any complaints or experience in the nonprofit world with sexual harassment claims. And then secondly, I wanted to ask or piggyback on a past call that was personal experience, that I was once working with a police officer who was helping investigate the theft of my boyfriend's studio, stereo. God, that must have been like 30 years ago. And he sexually, you know, put passes on me, and I didn't do anything about it, but I don't know what the track record is of that would be, you know, law enforcement and nonprofit are the two questions.
Okay, thank you. Noreen, do you get many calls from women or men working in the nonprofit world?
You know, I wouldn't say that. I would say that we occasionally get those calls, but it undoubtedly happens. And I think that certainly whenever there's a power dynamic in the workplace, that it will happen. I think that the myth is that it only happens in certain kinds of workplaces or certain types of workers. And our hotline experience and our case experience tells us that that's absolutely not the case. And I think in terms of what you're mentioning about police, you know, we don't tend to get those calls. But, I mean, how horrifying, right? You go to a person who's supposed to help you, and then you're hit on. And, of course, those cases exist.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add to that, I mean, I think that's right, that sexual harassment cuts across, you know, all different types of workplaces. And recent polling showed that something like 25% of women and 10% of men reported experiencing harassment. And among low-wage workers, it was about 25% of women and 25% of men when they separately polled low-wage workers. So it's a, you know, it's a widespread problem in the workplace. That much is clear. You know, and it's one, you know, I think one of the things that we really need to thank Anita Hill for is that she gave victims of harassment the voice to come forward, and that she made that more possible. And I know at the Law Center, which has been around for a very long time, and was involved in those events, after Anita Hill testified, you know, the phones at the center rang off the hook, you know, with women reporting harassment who had suffered in silence before. And I hope that her legacy for the next generation with this film coming out and younger audiences seeing that is that when women and men are entering the workplace today, you know, that they see it and that they know if this happens to them that they should not suffer in silence.
All right. Thank you again, Ruthann. Let's hear next from Bob in Richmond. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm just getting into my car. I just wanted to say I work with a lot of people in the residential care home industry, and that's an area in which the workers there, I think, are in kind of a double bind, the women, because sometimes they will be harassed or abused by their coworkers. And if they report that, then a lot of times they're working in unsupervised conditions at night, kind of a difficult environment. But the other area where they, I think, this is my experience, is that they are in a bind is that they will sometimes be harassed or propositioned by the resident in a care facility that is like an assisted living or person who is still cognizant enough to be able to make a pass. And, of course, if they report that, generally speaking, the operator is, of the tone is kind of reluctant to pursue it. If you've got a $4,000 or $5,000 a month person at risk of being accused of sexual harassment. I just wondered if anybody had encountered or worked much with people in that particular industry.
Okay, thank you. Noreen, were you able to hear Bob? His line was a little bad. It was kind of
bad.
Yeah,
no,
okay,
I could hear it. And, you know, Bob's feeling about that industry is really consistent with our hotline calls and what we hear from our colleagues in the field. I think that there are a lot of urban equivalents of, you know, women working in the fields, you know, 80% of which a recent study said have been the victim of sexual assault or harassment. They are isolated. They don't have access to coworkers. The janitorial industry is another example of that, and I do believe that residential and home health care workers face the very same problem. And their problem is compounded also by the fact that those claims are in such small workplaces. Enforcement becomes extremely challenging, and so ERA is working with some sister organizations to think through how we can strengthen up the contracts between home health care providers and the residents to make clear about a zero-tolerance policy for sexual harassment. But I think you really do pinpoint a very troubling industry in terms of sexual harassment.
And then it's also prevalent for farm workers. Frontline had an excellent documentary called Rape in the Fields.
Rape.
I believe it was last year. So we've got about a minute left. Noreen, what would you like to see change when it comes to sexual harassment?
I'd like to see change, just a better commitment in terms of resources to get legal services for low-wage women workers who don't have access to justice. I'd like to see a more heartfelt commitment to training all employees, and not just in California, but outside California, where training isn't required necessarily by federal law. I'd like to see the passage of the Fair Employment Protection Act to make sure that employers are held liable for the harassment of lower-level supervisors who really form the supervisory structure for low-wage women workers.
And Liz, what would you add to that? What would you like to see change?
Well, I think that's right. I think we need to make sure that that there's a commitment all across the country to training to prevent harassment and to employers really monitoring their workplaces and taking steps to address it when it occurs. I think in the immediate term, we need to pass the Fair Employment Protection Act and make sure that, as Noreen said, when these lower-level supervisors harass their victims, and those are very often the supervisors in the low-wage workplace, that those victims also have strong protections.
Liz Watson is Director of Workplace Justice for Women and Senior Counsel at the National Women's Law Center. Noreen Farrell is Executive Director of Equal Rights Advocates. Their 40th anniversary luncheon is on June 17th in San Francisco. Anita Hill is the keynote, and their hotline number is 800-839-4372. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What are the major concerns with transporting oil by rail? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about plans to move millions of gallons of crude oil through California cities. Last summer, a train carrying about 2 million gallons of oil through Canada derailed and exploded, and 47 people were killed. So how safe is oil by rail? The Berkeley City Council recently voted to oppose it. What mechanisms are in place in the event of a spill? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.